America leads the world in medicine development. It matters. We get new medicines first, nearly 3 years faster. 5 million Americans go to work because we make medicines here at home. And not relying on other countries keeps us safe. But China is racing to overtake us. Will we let them, or will we choose to stay ahead? When America leads, America cures. Let's tell Washington to keep us in the lead.
Learn how at americacures.com. Paid for by Pharma.
Hello, everybody, and welcome in to the 2025 Inside Boxing Live year-end award show extravaganza. It's presented by PPV.com. I'm Dan Canobio. That is a martini-drinking Chris Algieri. It's our favorite show of the year. The year is over. 2025, we're going to break it all down. Awards, storylines, all that and more. Chris, what a year it has been here in the sport that we love and we call boxing.
Ups and downs, ebbs and flows, but that's what it is to be a boxing fan. It's another glorious year. We've gotten through it. And I think we're on the precipice of a really good year coming up. So that's always a good feeling to have going into the coming year.
Those that are listening on iTunes, you want to run over to your YouTube because we are decked out in our finest gear. Chris has his tuxedo on black, got the martini, like I just said. I am wearing my finest red tuxedo. It is not a t-shirt. It is was not purchased on Amazon. It was not ripped open 5 minutes before this episode. I am not going to get a horrible rash from this shirt. We've talked about this at length. I put on some pounds and I put on some muscle. So my tux from 2015 that I bought for my friend's wedding doesn't fit anymore. So I went with the tux t-shirt. Sorry.
That's what aging is all about, Dan. Unlike me, who is ageless, I'm still wearing the same tux since my bike career at this point. But yeah, man, it is what it is. The red tux is a nice touch, though. It's
thank you.
Red shirt.
I was thinking about ripping the sleeves off of it.
That would have been.
I was a little afraid.
Next level.
You ever seen a sleeveless tux shirt? Starting a whole new category of a genre of fashion here on Inside Boxing Live.
I've never seen it. No, but I do like it. Maybe Dog the Bounty Hunter. If he like at a wedding, he probably had a shirtless, sleeveless tux shirt.
I can see that. Like getting way too drunk, kicked out of the wedding, goes in back to his regular day job. Yeah, flowing mullet. Let's not to get into. We will break down the Naoya Inoue destruction of Picasso and Nakatani's fight over Sebastian Hernandez Reyes. We'll try to work it into the year-end award show. A lot of votes. Thank you to everyone who went out there and voted. Record turnout at the voting machines this year. Had over 400 responses. Some surprising ones. A late charge. I don't want to give away too much. But let's start off with storylines, Chris. Let's start off with what 2025 was. And I think there's no bigger storyline in boxing in 2025 and will be the biggest storyline in 2026. Was and is the TKO takeover. Whether it's Dana White, Turki Alsheikh, Nick Khan, and TKO, their big announcement. And then them trying to amend the Ali Act. Them promoting Canelo Crawford. Them going on a campaign against the sanctioning bodies, a lot of propaganda, a lot of concerted efforts to go against the current regime that is boxing with Turkey's blessing, with Nick Khan, with Dana White, with the Terrence Crawford as their main fighter. It's not going away. It's the biggest storyline outside of the ring, and it's going to potentially shape what we see out of boxing in the next 10 years if they get their way. But would you agree that that is the biggest storyline to come out of 2025?
Without question. Congress is involved. Like this is a big deal. You know, yeah. When does Congress get involved with boxing? You know, and it's been quite a number of years since anything like that has happened. So yeah, absolutely. This is the biggest storyline out there. You know, you mentioned their campaign. They started getting guys. Mike Tyson's like, oh, they should reform it. They got, you know, Terrence Crawford. They're getting all these guys come out against it. And it's funny. You have the boxing promoters who they in themselves don't like the Ali Act, but they're so steadfast in going against the move that this new move or that wasn't their idea. It's like, no, we got to keep it the way it is. It's been really interesting to watch as like a fan who really is kind of in the know and watching, because we are still fans, guys. When I say fans, I mean us too. We are boxing fans, and we're watching just like you guys are.
Yeah, Rick, well, I would say I work in the business, so I want everything to thrive. Like, I very rarely root for a certain fighter. I'm always rooting for the best outcome. That's great for boxing. But yeah, this is something that you just can't ignore at this point. It really went into overdrive, I would say, beginning of December, that week in December where when we were in San Antonio for the Pitbull Cruz fight. That's the same time that Terrence Crawford relinquished the WBC belt, didn't want to pay the sanctioning fees. That's the same time Nick Khan was going and doing media rounds. That's the same time that the TKO pretty much announced that they're doing a show at the end of January from the Apex, which really isn't the biggest splash. Like, you know, it's going to be an Apex card, and I believe they just signed Jose Venezuela. You know, a good fighter, but like, yeah, it's going to be, it's more of the symbolism than I think what we're going to see inside the ring. And it's more of a very long play. We talked about this on the show, like, at length. It's probably like our February episodes. I went back and looked at all of our episodes. We did 90 podcasts this year, by the way. Pretty impressive.
90?
90.
That's very impressive, and it's pretty cool to see how far this thing has come. The little engine that could Inside Boxing Live chugs along.
That's right, baby. But I went back and looked at earlier in the year when they had their big announcement. It was Turkey, Dana, and Nick Khan at the table, and then the pay scale leaked, and we're talking about a league, and it took over our episodes, and it took over early on. But
that was, you know, February. You're saying that's when they came out.
Yes, because I was in Toronto for an MVP card. I remember doing it from Toronto.
Wow. Yeah, that came out of the gate like so fast and explosive. And then it kind of trailed off a little bit and then blew back up, like you just said.
Well, yeah, I think it went like the Canelo Crawford, which is going to be a big, big theme of this episode, was their big crowning moment, TKO. That was not a PBC event. That was not a Top Rank event. This was Dana White front and center. This was Netflix. This was TKO. This was supposed to be different. You had Max Kellerman up there. That moment was wild when Max went overboard. That's true. That could be moment of the year, this type of stuff right there. And Canelo had to check him.
Yes, that was pretty awesome. Canelo. I was talking a lot of shit about Canelo leading up to that. Maybe not a lot of shit. I'm a big Canelo fan, but that was like saving grace. That was awesome.
Yeah, like Max Kellerman going overdrive on Turkey and Dana White. And then Canelo's like, Max, stop. Please tone it down a little bit. But that's what we're seeing now. We're seeing a concerted effort from the powers that be over on that side of things, trying to jam it down your throat. And we're going to see a change with the Ali Act. I mean, it is coming. It's inevitable. And we're going to see a big time effort to start something different. Maybe get rid of these sanctioning bodies. Maybe get rid of these belts. We're also going to see the Eddie Hearns, the Oscars fight back. And it is a very, very interesting time in the sport. I know there's a lot of people out there like, who cares? Just give me the fights. But it matters. This stuff matters. And we're seeing a seismic change of the structure of the sport right before our eyes. Like, you very rarely see things like this play out. Like, usually they happen 100 years ago and you live with it, which pretty much what boxing has been for the last 100 years. And now we see some big-time power players, a lot of money, TKO, trying to take over an entire sport.
I'm not sure how long this is going to last, but it's going to last. This is a war, and we're going to look back at this as literally a time in boxing history as a revolutionary war. This is a revolution against, you know, the powers that be, the powers that are in control, the rules and the legislation that's been put in place in the past. And I don't know. These guys are not going to take no for an answer, and they have a ton of money to push and fight this battle. But it's, you know, like you said, there's going to be pushback. I mean, for how long can they push back? That's really what's going to be the question mark. Whether or not this eventually goes through, I don't think really is a question. I don't think these guys are stopping.
Yeah. It's a locomotive and they're going to try really hard, and they're going to make a concerted effort. We're going to see boxing on Paramount Plus in January. We'll see the type of fights that they announce and the type of fights that they roll out. I know the talent team is going to be star-studded. They might be spending way 50 times more on the talent than they are on the actual fights for the first couple shows of Zuffa Boxing League. But that's something to keep an eye on this year. Turkey, of course, is another storyline in 2025. You know, 2023, it began, maybe even a little earlier. I mean, he is the biggest player in boxing by a long shot. It was Al Haymon for years. Now it's Turki Alsik, and he's making big fights. We saw fights in Saudi Arabia. We saw fights in London. We saw fights in Vegas, New York City. This guy is really becoming a big-time power player, and not the biggest storyline now because he's now just become part of the fabric of boxing. He's just top promoter now, top dog.
Yeah, he's a top dog putting on the biggest shows. Yes, it's baked into the cake now. You know, he is part of boxing. There's been positives, there's been negatives, but I think it's been overwhelmingly positive in terms of the shows that we've gotten, the fights that we've put on, and even the learning process. While they've been figuring out Riyadh and these cards and the ring cards, they've gotten a lot better. The shows are better, the cards are better, the matchups are better. We're getting the fights that we want. The cards are more stacked. They've been doing a little bit better with the run of show, although the card of the weekend was very long, unnecessarily. They're putting on good fights, and that's at the end of the day for the fans. That's what matters. And the fighters are getting paid, which always makes me happy.
Getting that dolo. Mm-hmm. Speaking of getting paid, I think another storyline this year, Tank Davis, the demise. Speaking of getting paid and not getting paid,
that's Tank Davis, fumble of the bag of the year award goes to Tank Davis.
Fumble of the year. Yeah, him and Francis Ngannou. Ngannou for not taking the Jake Paul fight. Tank Davis for foregoing a rematch with Lamont Roach for a fight with, or an exhibition with Jake Paul, only to get that taken away from him. Taking a knee in his fight with Lamont Roach after looked like he was going to lose the fight. I mean, he came into this year huge. He came into this year coming off of the Frank Martin win. 30 years old. All right. I think we were saying, you go back to some episodes of, oh, this is going to be a huge year for Tank. He's going to fight three times in 2026. We literally, that's what things we were saying. Like Tank Davis is going to fight three times.
Stupid.
Yes. Well, listen, a promoter whispers in your ear something on a trip. I take it at face value. But, you know, Tank Davis does not listen to anyone. And he goes to the beat of his own drum. But what a horrible year for Gervonta Davis.
Didn't win this year. He had a draw against Lamont Roach. Remember that? People, I think people forget about that. People, I don't know how people look at it. People, I think some people look at it like Lamont won, you know, or they're just like, I don't know, you know, Davis won. No, it was a draw. Like, he didn't win the fight. He doesn't have a win this
if
he, year.
I mean, if Steve Willis didn't have the brain fart of the year,
yeah,
and the judges also didn't just go in lockstep with him, Lamont Roach should have won that fight.
Right, and he's been treated as such, other than, you know, maybe his purses. But Davis gets a draw, which most people look at probably like a loss. Then he loses a lot of cred by taking the Jake Paul fight and turning down the Lamont Roach rematch. The streets are not happy about that, by the way. And then you get to just before this huge mega crossover weird circus fight with Jake Paul. And, you know, the kid gets in legal trouble again for domestic abuse charges. And there's all that. And we're not going to get into that portion of it. But, yeah, bad, bad, bad year for Gervonta Davis.
Moving on to some more bad. The running and inactivity I have. Do you remember how much of a storyline that was after May 2nd? The May 2nd weekend, which was maybe the lowest point as a boxing fan I've had in a long time. Coming off of how bad that Times Square card was, coming off of how bad Canelo's skull was, three of the five worst fights, according to CompuBox, in terms of punch stats, happened on the same weekend. And all we wanted to talk about was Devin Haney running, or why aren't these guys fighting hard? Are they getting paid too much? Saudi Arabia, should they be fighting at 5 in the morning in Saudi Arabia? Massive storyline in the middle of the year that pretty much took over, where for about a month straight, we were trying to solve this issue. We're trying to figure out what's causing it. Luckily, it went away because we got some better fights as the year went on. But that was a big time story of 2025.
Big time story. And people don't know this is behind the scenes. I had to talk Dan off a ledge that weekend. We had a bad weekend. Dan was really, really upset. He was thinking about
quitting. We got in a lot of trouble that weekend. Remember, Chris?
Yeah, we got in a lot of trouble that weekend.
Turkey tweeting at us.
For speaking our minds about the show. But yeah, listen, we got past it. And yeah, you mentioned, exactly. You know, we talked about Gervonta Davis and, you know, his bad year. Devin Haney, pretty good year, man. Talk about the guy who at the beginning of the year was the track star. And then at the end of the year is whipping Brian Norman's ass. I mean, and everyone thought he was
boxing.
That's boxing, baby. That's
it's a what have you done for me lately sport. You can go from zero to hero. You can go from hero to zero. Gervonta Davis. You can go from runner to, wow, this guy is actually really good. And I was going to put that on here. Like if we had a comeback player of the year, comeback fighter of the year, you got to go Devin Haney. I mean, from getting splattered last year, suing Ryan Garcia, just us questioning whether he could still do it. You know, is his chin up to it? Is his mental up to it? And then he goes in, has a win against who did he beat? Who did he fight?
Ramirez.
A win against Ramirez, where we talked about it ad nauseum. We were not happy with that performance. Then goes in and disarms Brian Norman, becomes a 3-division world champion, stock high, going to be in huge fights in next year. One of the better. I don't care what you say about the kid. Look at some of his adversaries out there. Devin Haney is someone that we should all be like, all right, this guy is doing it the right way. And good for him. But yeah, a big part of the year was the running and the inactivity. And inactivity, I put, because I just don't think we saw a lot of our stars fight this year. Terrence Crawford, who retired, it's a massive story, if you believe him or not, fought once this year. Usyk fought once this year. The star, Teofimo, fought once. Shakur fought twice. Either two or one time. We didn't see any threes, and we saw 1-4, and that was Inoue, who is the shining star, I believe, of 2025 in many ways. But inactivity is a big problem, Chris.
Big problem. And it not only is a problem for us as fans because we're not getting to see our favorite fighters fight, it's a problem for building stars. We're not seeing the stars being built the way that we had in the 80s and the 90s because the fan base is just not connected to anyone because they're just not active enough. They're not in your face enough. And it's crazy because social media allows for such unfettered access for fans with stars. But if you don't fight, it doesn't matter. You have to fight. Teofimo Lopez tried it. He tried to be in everyone's face without being in the ring last year or the year before. And it's just like, it doesn't work, dude. We don't want to see you, you know, at events. We want to see you fighting because that's what we're here for. And that's why we're fans of you, those who are fans of Teofimo. So, yeah, you got to fight. And when you don't have stars and you don't have or guys fighting off and you're not going to create stars, and boxing is in desperate need of stars right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And Teofimo is a good example of someone that tried, you know, doing the streaming stuff. And now I see him with Ryan Garcia. Is he a streamer or is he a fighter? Because now he's doing different streams every night. I get it, because that's like where everyone is right now. The young demographic is watching these streams.
It's a crazy amount of money in that too, Dan. The kids are making crazy money. Crazy.
Bro, it's insane. Aiden Ross just did a stream with Terrence Crawford. Terrence Crawford, it's like the new place to go. It's like, I think it's supplanted, like going on McAfee's show or going on Rogan podcast, is sitting in like a living room with Kai Cenat or Aiden Ross or any of these guys and just talking. And Aiden Ross asking horrible questions, no follow-ups to Crawford, not knowing pretty much any of these guys. Crawford says Canelo wasn't the toughest fighter I ever faced. It was Uriarchus Gamboa. And Aiden Ross, there's no way in hell Aiden Ross knows who Uriarchus Gamboa is. Right. Yeah. He just went, oh shit, yeah. Damn. And then they move on to the next question. But amazing. Point being, I'm on this tangent. World. What a world. Yes, I think that I hope these guys don't think they can fight once, do a bunch of social media to stay relevant, and then keep that going. Like now twice is now considered like some type of achievement.
It's a good year. Canelo had that four fight year, and we were all like, it was amazing. It was awesome. And like, he had some good fights. He had some, you know, I mean, he performed well in all of them, but he had some like good matchups. He had some less than stellar matchups.
Anvi Yildirim.
Yildirim, terrible. But he fought in Miami. That was cool. Like there was a reason for it. And it was in between, you know, other tough fights. So
right.
There was that. But now, yeah, he fought twice this year, had a horrible year. So, well, talk about another guy who had a really bad year. We're trying to talk about year's best. We keep going back to year's worst. Canelo to having the worst fight in maybe I've ever seen live was the skull fight. And then losing to a guy 3-weight classes below him and losing all of his titles. Bad year for Canelo.
Bad year in the ring. Great year money-wise.
Well, yeah. I mean, he's
goes he's without
gonna,
saying.
He's always going to – his net worth always grows. I'll put it that way.
Yeah. Canelo had a rough one. Terrence Crawford retiring. And I talked about running and inactivity. And like kind of in that same family is like I've just started to think about how all of the biggest stars in boxing are also aging out and are going to be retired very, very soon. Terrence Crawford, just retired. Canelo Alvarez doesn't have an opponent and has two fights left, maybe three, before he rides off into the sunset. Usyk fought once, and as we're talking, he's 38 years old. Tyson Fury hasn't fought in years. Anthony Joshua is 36 and looking his age. Naoya Inoue, who fought four times, said, no, I'm not fighting four times. I'm fighting twice next year. You know, he is 32, but he's had a lot of mileage on the odometer there. So some of the biggest names of the sport are aging out, are going to be gone maybe next year, maybe the year after that. And, you know, it's a little scary because the next generation up is like the Teofimos, the Shakurs, who are, you know, coincidentally fighting each other, the Ryan Garcias, the Devin Haney's. So it's in like kind of shaky hands. But one thing I've learned in this sport, because you've been following it longer than I have, is like someone always emerges. Like after Floyd retired, someone emerged. After De La Hoya retired, Floyd was there. After Ali was Sugar Ray Leonard. After Sugar Ray Leonard was Tyson. Someone always does emerge, but doesn't mean we can't be a little like worried about like where the sport is headed in terms of star power.
Right, and this is exactly what my point was before about we're in desperate need of creating or having stars. But there is a crop of younger generation guys who are a bit throwback in terms of their willingness to fight each other or fight guys in their prime. I think of guys like Bam Rodriguez. I think of David Benavidez. You know, You know, and even Devin Haney is a guy now who's showing himself that he's willing to take the tough fights. Shakur, absolutely, because Shakur's always been that guy. He just can't get the dance partners, but now he has that one. He has that dance partner. Teofimo's another one. Even with a loss to Shakur, if he is to lose, I'm not making my prediction by any means. But even either one of those guys with a loss, I think has the ability to come back. Teofimo more so than Shakur, because Teofimo already has a loss. Shakur, that O is really important. Think about like Tommy Hearns and Sugar Ray Leonard when they fought. Yeah, somebody has to lose, but you still create stars. You still have guys who can come back. And as long as they're willing to stay busy and fight other fights and tough fights, then they can come back. And Teofimo is one of those guys. He's been willing to take tough fights. Even the fights that are kind of under the radar in terms of like the Jermaine Ortizes. Nobody wants to fight that
Sandor
guy.
Sandor Martin.
No one wants to fight that guy. He fights that guy and he gets raked over the coals because he doesn't have a great performance or doesn't look stunning. Or a lot of people thought he lost that fight. But regardless, he's still willing to take tough fights. So I think the new crop of guys – in a way has been leading the charge on that, always willing to fight the toughest guys around. I think that puts us in a good place. The issue is going to be the activity. Like this, this whole overreaching idea here is the activity. The inactivity of these guys. Teofimo Lopez, who likes to just run off into the sunset and go do other things. Of course, Stevenson's problem is his hands. You never know how long he could be out for a hand issue. You know, Anaya, in a way, doesn't have that much left. Everyone has a timeline. Bam Rodriguez is just running out of dance partners. He's just whipping everybody's ass, which can be a bad thing.
Yeah.
Now in a way, he's getting jammed down our throats with Bam Rodriguez. Can he jump up 3-way classes and fight him next?
Crazy.
Like, it is crazy. It is crazy. But no, listen, there can be trepidations, like you said, about, you know, how we feel going into this vacuum that's about to create itself. But there's a lot of opportunity for someone to step into that hole and become a brand new star. And that's exciting.
Yeah, very exciting. And I know like we kind of gravitate towards the negative, not so much on this show, but like we're talking about, oh, this had a bad year or good, bad year, or what happened here. I do think 2026 is like scheduled or it's shaping up to be a phenomenal year. January is loaded. It used to be the quietest time of the year. Fights every weekend, big fights. End of the month, we get Shakur and Teofimo, same night. Xander Zayas is fighting Abbas Barao. Moses Hatalma, who had an awesome year, and he's going to be a big-time figure in 2026 in heavyweight division, fights in January. Some of the matchups that we're going to see at 147, like Ryan Garcia and Barrios, she may not like that fight, but it's setting things up for other fights to happen at the end of the year. And I honestly think we're 2026 is going to be even bigger. Another thing, too, we forgot to mention about 2025 was like the lulls. Like, there was like months where no big fights, or like 2-3 weeks in a row with nothing at all. Like
which isn't that crazy historically in boxing. You and I have lived through many years like that. Probably more years than not were like that. We got so used to the last 2 years that there was no lulls. Like our podcast grew in those 2 years where it was just like boxing was just on fire. It was big fights every month all year round. You know, and that was when like Turkey and Riyadh were just coming in. So like times where there used to be lulls, like in like midsummer, like in July. Yeah. There was like one fight. Not when Turkey came into town. He would make those big fights. Then you get a Japanese fighter. You're getting a Japanese network market. Now all those Christmas fights, those New Year's fights happens because those were lulls for us for a long time too. So I think we got a little bit spoiled by those 2 years, and now this year was kind of like a regular year, which to us turns into a bad year. But I don't know. I don't think 25 was that bad of a year.
It was good. I just wish they were spread out more, and there's nothing that we can do about that. Like January 31st, there's four cards that night. Like, why wouldn't Zayas and Barao, which is a great fight, it doesn't have a broadcast home, like a week before, week after, going up against Teofimo Shakur, they're going to get swallowed up. Like, that's one thing about the sport that just drives me crazy is, like, there's no efforts as a whole to help it all out. It's just like,
nah,
everyone has their own league.
Boxing is full of cannibals. We eat each other. Full of cannibals. And we can't help ourselves. It's dog eat dog, unfortunately, because our sport could be bigger.
Let's get in to the awards. Thank you to everyone that voted. Like I said, over 400 responses. That's awesome.
That's awesome.
We have Fighter of the Year, Fight of the Year, Performance, Event, Knockout, Storyline, and Moment. I'm going to do it backwards. You know, usually on the Academy Awards, they wait to the end of the night where it's like midnight and they do the best film.
Yeah.
And they rush them off the stage and then they go right into the local news. But now we're going to go Fighter of the Year right off the bat because that's how we roll. And it's also something I want to talk. I am shocked, Chris, because I had the data. You know, I have the data here for the last couple of days. For Fighter of the Year, Terrence Crawford was ahead by 20 points in terms of percentage points. And then Naoya Inoue went in the ring on Saturday and went 12-0 again, blanked Picasso, and the voting completely turned.
Wow.
And now, according to our listeners, Naoya Inoue is your 2025 Fighter of the Year with 47% of the vote to 42% for Terrence Crawford. So that final, that 4-0, that dominating performance once again, arguably won his last 24 rounds against top 10 opponents, solidified it. Naoya Inoue is your Inside Boxing Live 2025 Fighter of the Year.
Slow clap.
We could not get him for a comment. We could not get him for a speech, but
we spoke to his people. They're
thrilled.
They're very happy. They're very excited. We're going to mail him his award because obviously he couldn't get it in person.
His award is this Joshua Jake hotel key card.
We got a
doesn't work anymore.
Actually, you should hold on to that. That'll be
something. Yeah, I got that.
We should make actual awards for these. You know, tell you the truth.
Send them to the fighters.
Yeah, who wouldn't love that? Anyway, back to this discussion. Wow. And we spoke about this leading up to this, right? Because we talked about it on one of our last shows. Who's the Fighter of the Year? And we were like, man, it's Crawford because of, you know, he only fought once, but the fight was so big and he did what he did. And he was a quote unquote underdog. But we were like the inactivity, which has been a big theme of the show, like you said, from the top. Fighting four times in 1 year at the level that Naoya Inoue fights is crazy. Also, the fact that he puts on such exciting fights. The Cardenas fight, when he gets dropped, was like edge of your seat thrill.
Fighter and then
he
goes out there, candidate.
Goes out there trying to kill him for the next, you know, seven rounds while it lasts. Even the Picasso fight. I said this to you while we were watching it at 7 o'clock in the morning yesterday. Yo, this guy's willingness to throw defense out the window in order to hurt you, his willingness to get hit in order to cause you damage is so enticing. It is so. He's just an honorable warrior. He's going for it. That fight against Picasso could have been super boring. He didn't allow it to be. He stood in there. He got hit with big shots because he was trying to knock the guy out. The MJ fight, which, dude, I was like, oh, MJ might be able to beat this guy. Smokes him. Completely outboxes him. Shows a whole new level to his skill set. Yeah, I mean, our fans are not dumb. Our listeners are not dumb. And I get where they're coming from.
I personally had Inoue as mine. The four, I think activity matters.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. Crawford had an awesome win, and he deserves all the flowers, especially in his retirement. It's a two-dog race, in my opinion, and I just thought Inoue's 4-0, all undisputed fights, all ring magazine belt on the line. Picasso, MJ, and Cardenas is a pretty good run, and the Yi Jun Kim was a blowout. But like I said, if you fight 4 years, I'll give you, if you fight four times in a year, I'll give you one blowout. I'll give you an Envy Yildirim.
But that wasn't even supposed to be a blowout. That was supposed to be Sam Goodman. Sam Goodman got cut and had to drop out of the fight. That would have been another. Bro. Sam Goodman's a good fighter. That would have been another really good fighter.
That's a top 10 guy. Like Picasso's top 10. MJ, ranked number one in the division. Cardenas, who came in as a massive underdog, but has shown that win's going to age really well. He just had one of the craziest knockouts on a Pro Box card, and I believe his stock is super high. Inoue handles him and stops him in eight in a fight of the year. Listen, I understand like you don't know a lot of these names, but they are top 10 guys. They're not hand-picked opponents. He's fighting four times. He's super exciting. Like I felt like I was watching a damn like video game yesterday. Yeah. I know he's not getting the knockouts anymore, but he is in complete control. It's beautiful to watch. In and out, power. Just everything is just flowing in there from the opening bell. I thought he won every single round, and I thought maybe he won 11 against MJ. So we're talking about like pure domination now, and he's doing it on his terms. So I think he's the fighter of the year. I know that you had Crawford. What's your case for Crawford?
My case for Crawford is just that exactly what I said at the open. I mean, the magnitude of the fight, the fact that he was a massive underdog, the fact that he's got undisputed in his third weight class, his fifth weight class world champion. He beat Canelo Alvarez. He was a huge underdog. So it's all those obvious things and things that we spoke about. But it's really hard to go against in a way and the way that he is during the fight. So
are you changing your pick?
No. I mean, I got to stick with my pick. I made my pick, but I get it. I understand why people came in. My nephew, Michael Algieri, texted me during the fight, and he goes, as soon as the fight was over, he goes, wow. He goes, anyways, fighter of the year for me. And he's also my pound for pound number one. That's a big adjustment.
Mikey
Hot Takes comes in with Nayo Inoue as his guy.
No, it's not that crazy to say that he's pound for pound number one now.
It's not. He's so goddamn
activity.
Good. Activity, but also his utter and sheer dominance while staying active. You know, we these guys who have these big long layoffs, like, well, what if they were more active? Maybe they wouldn't be undefeated. Maybe they would have taken losses. Maybe, you know, if they put themselves on the line, they would get dropped the way Inoue does. Because that's a knock on Inoue, right? Oh, well, he's been dropped. Well, you know, Crawford's never been down. Well, yeah, you know, if you fight top contenders four times a year, there's more chances for you to get dropped. And Inoue takes those risks and takes those chances. But when you see also, just from a skill standpoint, when you watch the way that he fights and you see all the different things he does, he showed a new wrinkle on yesterday with Picasso. That head movement, that up and down, that left and right, that up and down. You know why he's doing that? He's getting ready for Nakatani. Nakatani, I've said this for a while, he has a hybrid style. He's got that Japanese fighter mentality and spirit, but he's got a West Coast kind of flavor to him. He does that kind of stuff because he trains over here. He's got a Mexican coach. Nayo Inoue didn't have that up-down pull slip slide as much. Now you're seeing it a lot more. He's working on that, getting prepared for Nakatani. The fact that this guy is still working and getting better, yikes. I mean,
bro, he's awesome.
He deserves all the accolades.
He's everything that's right with the sport, and you made a really good point there with the willingness to put yourself out there. Putting yourself out there four times in a year and your stock not really declining. Yeah, he went down twice this year, but he also knocked out these opponents. So not only is he just giving fans,
well,
you're
he was
just seeing him
year,
more.
But
once.
Within,
Neary was the year
was
before.
End of last year, yeah.
Right. Good point. Thank you. The fact that he's putting himself out there as much as he has four times a year, and usually you put yourself out there as a boxer, you're going to get nitpicked. We're going to find weaknesses in you. And as boxing fans, we tend to dwell on the weaknesses. We very rarely talk about the strengths these fighters have. It's always like, oh, this guy doesn't have a chin, or this guy gasses out. Putting himself out there four times and seemingly nothing really to talk bad about. I mean, if anything, he's getting better. Like he's now... The power is not there anymore, or it's we haven't seen it, but he's just taking over fights. Like he's just, it's complete control. That to me is super impressive. Like longevity really impresses me. Like reminds me of Pacquiao when he was this absolute bull in a china shop, throwing close to 80, 90 punches around. And then after the Marquez knockout, you would attest, you could know this, you actually stepped into the ring with him. He lowered his output to like 45 punches around and was sitting down on his shots. It was a lot more economical, and he was smarter. And I was like, damn,
yeah,
Pacquiao is so smart. Like Pacquiao is that this is what separates the good from the greats. is being able to adjust at age 32 and now go on another run, because Inoue is going to go on another run now. And let's just talk about this before we move on to the other awards. So Juto Nakatani skates by Sebastian Hernandez-Reyes, arguably lost the fight, could have been a draw, just getting blasted, his eyes practically shut. First fight at 122 pounds, realizes that he doesn't have the advantages anymore, has to box. Unbelievable pressure from Hernandez-Reyes, and just unbelievable, relentless, awesome fight. Could have been fight of the year contender. But I don't think that Inoue is going to fight like Hernandez did. So I still am excited for Inoue Nakatani, but it doesn't have like that like same juice that it had like Friday. Like, it was an organic mega fight. Now it feels a tiny bit manufactured because one judge had it 118, 110, which means like, let's keep this gravy train rolling. Let's not do anything to upend, which should be a massive fight in Japan. But, you know, Nakatani is, people were picking him as the sexy pick to beat Inoue. I don't see it. I think Inoue is going to win that fight, but I'm excited for it.
I think Inoue stops him. I saw right away in this fight over the weekend with Nakatani. I think it was round two. And I texted you and I was like, he's at 122. He's not the same. He's just not the same guy. He's not the same guy. And you could see that he looked small. The power wasn't there because he was landing brilliant shots. I mean, crazy hard, clean power shots. And Hernandez walked through everything. Didn't even get it marked on his face either, if you notice. That's a sign of a guy when their power is real or not, is when they leave marks. And he just left nothing on him all night long. Really couldn't get any respect. Was landing brilliant body shots, uppercuts, nonstop shots early on, and just was getting no respect from his opponent. That's not a good sign. But what really turned me off to his chances against fighting Inoue, no jab. No jab to speak of. His jab is only to blind you and set up power shots. There is no control of distance. There is no distance manipulation with his jab. He didn't have the in and out to deal with a pressure fighter. That's stuff you need to learn. And when you can't hurt a guy, you have to find other ways to utilize what boxing is all about. And he just didn't have that. He just didn't have that in his arsenal. You're not beating Naio in a way if you don't have that in your arsenal.
Yeah, it was an eye-opening performance. A little frustrating because I thought Nakatani, I didn't think there was anything that could derail Nakatani in a way from being like that pure mega fight that like, just, wow, we got to be there. You know, this is it. This is like the boxing fan super fight.
Yeah, and then canceled Nakatani, my flights. Dan canceled my flights. We're not going.
I have that power. I went in and I took that away from you. I still want to see it. And like, one shaky performance from Nakatani, it's not stopping me from wanting to see this Inoue fight. And I also Inoue does not fight like her. Like, he's not going to be relentless pressure.
Yeah.
It's going to be a way different fight. But that being said, I don't see anything or any threats to Inoue in the next couple of years. Like, Nakatani, we thought, was the threat. I think he handles him. Like, Bam is so far away from happening. And it's just like, we got to the point now in Inoue where they're going to throw these big names at him and he's going to entertain the thought of them, whereas in years past, he would just diminish him. He didn't even talk about Nakatani until about a year ago. I mean, Bam was never even an option for Inoue because of the weight difference. And, you know, they have a similar or mutual trainer or manager guy. Mr. What's his name? Mr. Honda.
Mr. Honda, yeah.
Who's like the turkey of the Far East.
But he's been around for a long time. Very long time.
Point is, I think Inoue should just stay at 122. Like, I tweeted this out yesterday. Got some pushback.
I don't want to see him at 26.
Right. Well, like, I obviously will watch. Like, him at featherweight is getting, like, it's a whole new crop of fighters that he can potentially fight against. But I think now with the Nakatani fight, and if they really want to push this Bam fight, and if the zone pushes for it hard enough and Turkey pushes for it hard enough, Bam has to do some work and has to eventually get up to the weight. I mean, there's two fights right there. And Inoue can find another guy at 122 to fight either next or after Nakatani. Like, I don't have to see Inoue go to featherweight.
I don't either. And that's, we have this problem where we have greats and we just kind of push them into weight classes they don't belong in until they lose. And then people talk shit. It's like, whatever, he lost to so-and-so. Yeah, well, yeah, you forced them. You forced them into unnatural positions, because it's a bloodlust to see these guys, you know, fight these names and get these big fights. But there's weight classes for a reason. And I think we saw that over the weekend in both fights, actually, because you see now Nakatani, the power's not the same. He's just he used to have crushing knockout power. What he did to an all-time great and a friend of ours and a friend of the podcast, Nonito Donaire, was, I mean, crazy, the power that he showed in that fight. It's just not the same here at 122. And okay, he's human. So what? And then Nakatani, obviously we saw that he's not the same. There's weight classes for a reason. If we keep pushing this guy, we're just going to get him beat by somebody who doesn't deserve to beat him.
Yeah, it's very interesting. It's going to play out. We'll see how. I mean, they're looking at May 3rd, I believe, for Inoue Nakatani. It's still going to happen. Like, it's going to happen whether by May, we're going to be super excited for it. And this is going to wash off Nakatani's performance. And it's going to be awesome. That May weekend is going to be wild. Something to look forward to. And back to the awards. Fight of the year. 32% of our listeners selected Eubank versus Ben. The first fight. That's my fight of the year. I thought it was just could be event of the year. Could be a moment of the year when Senior stepped out of that SUV. You know, rarely do these types of fights live up to the expectations. These manufactured money type of fights. This one met it and then exceeded it. I thought Eubank Ben won. I know it's not the highest level, Chris. I know it's not the purest level, but it was rock'em sock'em type of Rocky script, and that was amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like you said, the storyline, their fathers, everything leading up to it had all of it. But like, at the end of the day, it's still fight of the year, not storyline of the year. And I actually have it in my storyline of the year. The when his dad walks out of the just a little.
He's here.
Yeah, that was amazing. That was absolutely amazing. But in terms of the actual fight, I had Noakes and Abdullah Mason. I thought
banger.
that fight was nonstop action from beginning to end at the highest level possible. And unlike the Eubank and Ben fight, where Eubank completely ran out of gas at the end of the fight and made the fight really sloppy, Mason dug in and got better, even though he was tired and getting hurt. And I just thought that was such a fantastic performance from both men. And I think that's important for a fight of the year. You need both guys to put on fantastic performances. And I think that Noakes is a major player now. We all know who he is. I think that Abdullah Mason is our world champion, but also we know that he's entertaining. For me, that was my fight of the year.
Awesome fight. I was such a banger, and it was on a great card. And it got, like, you know, a lot of eyeballs are on it, and it was a great fight. Mason and Noakes was a real throwback. Better BF Bivol came in second with 29.6. It happened so early in the year. These things tend to get a little bit buried, but shout out to our listeners.
That just shows you how smart our listeners are, because that was a boxing match. That was a chess match. You had to really watch that fight to understand how good it was, because it wasn't one of those fights that was like super entertaining. Everybody's it wasn't Rock'em Sock'em Robots. It was super super high level stuff.
20% of our voters had Inoue Cardenas over 18% Mason Noakes. So
wow,
there were some bangers this year. Honorable mention goes to Lester Martinez and Christian Mabili. Their 10 That's rounds right. of mm-hmm. complete war on the Canelo Crawford card. Buatsi and Callum Smith, which happened in February. It was kind of buried on an undercard. It deserves a shout out too. But for me, it's Eubank Ben. For you, it's Mason Noakes. Some really good fights this year spread out across 12 months. Performance of the year. This is a runaway. 77% chose Crawford over Canelo. And I'm thinking this, Chris, like, fighter of the year, debatable. Like, my fighter of the year is Inoue. My performance of the year is Crawford.
Yeah, my performance of the year is also Crawford. Have we ever had a vote that wide? 77%?
Is that 77? That's it. I'm looking at the pie chart right now. It's a Pac-Man. It's a giant pie chart right there. I can't think of anything else.
Yeah, I don't think in years past, I don't think we've ever had it that wide on anything. And yeah, there's no question. The way that it was virtuoso, what he was able to do at 38 years old with a guy three weight classes above him, and just all the talk leading up to it. So deserved win there for Crawford.
And some of the other ones, I mean, when you have 77%, I mean, I do want to shout out some other performances this year. Usyk over Dubois, grown man strength, just freaking dismantled him. And Dubois was coming off of the Joshua win, and many were saying, this is the end of Usyk. He goes in there, arguably his most dominant performance, and just flattens Dubois, which was so awesome to watch. Sick. Bivol over Beterbiev, only got 12%. Eubank over Ben.
phenomenal.
There's also some other great performances this year that's come to mind. Gary Antoine Russell's win over Jose Venezuela is not going to get a lot of it's not going to get a lot of love here, but the dude averaged like 95 punches a round and was so damn good. Like, that was a good one that comes to mind. Any others that for you, like, performances? There was, like, Haney over Norman.
Was a really good one.
Wasn't, like, you know, set off, like, records.
But the problem, like, the problem was that it got a little, like, boring towards the end. If it didn't, if he would have stepped on the gas more, I think I think more people would have taken to it. But also, people just hate Haney. So it doesn't matter how good he does.
It's true. We're going to get shit for, I guarantee there'll be comments because we praised him before. But that's the nature of the beast. Let's go over to event of the year. This is like the full card. This is the entire show. People are upset that I put Canelo, that I put Paul and Joshua on this. It got the least amount of votes. Bro, 33 million viewers. Like, every, like, it was the second most watched fight of the year and the third most watched fight. Like, ever. I mean, that's the event of the year type of status. But 55% of our voters chose Canelo Crawford as event of the year. That is the winner. I mean, that thing took over. It was on Netflix, did 41 million views. It did a shit ton of people there at Allegiant Stadium. That was a huge, one of the biggest fights of the last 10 years.
100%. I agree, and I'm going to push back on the fans who are pushing back on Paul Joshua because it's a humongous
event. Pushback.
And listen, I wanted to vote for Eubank Ben because it was such a big event leading up to it in so many ways for us because we're big boxing fans, but I just didn't move the needle on this side of the world. Like, on over there in the UK, I bet you everyone over there would be like, oh no, that was definitely the biggest. These guys are idiots.
Right.
But over here, it wasn't that big of a deal here. It was for guys like you and I because we're so locked into boxing. But I think for the general casual fans and boxing fans, it wasn't there, which is why you need these crossover fights to win the event of the year and why they did. I mean, essentially, Crawford Canelo is a crossover fight. And it's two boxers, but it's a weird crossover event because they're such big names, and it's so crazy to think a guy's going to jump three weight classes the way that he did. So, and then obviously Paul and Joshua.
I mean, that fight, Canelo Crawford had everything. It had two marquee names. It had Dana White promoting it. It had a football stadium. It had Netflix.
It had an undefeated fighter. You know, Crawford
jumping, daring to be great narrative, and it actually working. One thing I didn't bring up in the storylines this year was Netflix's role in boxing this year. They put on three events this year, Netflix, and all three of them were a little different. Obviously, Canelo Crawford was the real hardcore boxing event. Taylor Serrano was an all-women's card. And Paul Joshua was your entertainment kind of crazy crossover type of thing. So it was a big year for Netflix. Like, boxing was on Netflix this year. And not just once. It was on three times and massive numbers. Not the 110 million that we saw with Tyson and Paul. That was just like a once-in-a-lifetime type of thing. But 41 million viewers for Canelo Crawford. 33 for Paul Joshua, really good numbers for Taylor Serrano. I think that's pretty impressive. We talk about all the negative things, like boxing and Netflix is, I wouldn't say it's a strong relationship, but it's still something impressive.
I mean, it's a thing. It's a thing for now.
It's a thing. It's for a now, thing. Yeah.
It's a thing for now. And you know, doing one show last year and three shows this year, it's a good sign. It's trending up. I mean, the viewership is not trending up because there's only one Mike Tyson. But this is, dude, I don't know. I
108 million for Tyson.
So crazy. So
unreal, dude. Quadrupled the other ones.
It's Tyson. It's just,
but people, still, 60-year-old Tyson. It's unreal, it man. Matter, the guy's dude. Popularity is,
I've said it before on our show. He's the most recognizable human being on earth. If you think about it, he's the most recognizable human being on earth, Mike Tyson.
I think it's either him or Trump.
I think Mike will win.
Oh man. What do we have? I forgot. Oh, yeah. The Riyadh card in November got 23%. Actually came in second for event of the year. That had a lot of hype, and it lived up to the hype. Those were four awesome fights.
Good card. Really good card.
That was a fun one. Knockout of the year.
Once again, our smart listeners who pay attention to the details.
Oh, yeah. Knockout of the year. This isn't the biggest runaway, but it's 71%. Norman over Sasaki. That was nasty. That had everyone feeling that Norman could do the same thing to Haney. It got him the Haney fight or solidified the Haney fight. That's my knockout of the year. That's your knockout of the year. Fans knockout of the year. Second place is Opetaia over Sin Cara. Gassiev over Pulev. Frank Martin over Rancis Bartholomew was pretty nasty as well.
Also,
that
good.
Norman one was sick.
The normal one was sick. I mean, all the angles that they got it from, just yeah. Everything. That fight was awesome. We had two on the same night in on Pro Box last weekend that were
round of the year.
Should get honorable mention. We had three different. Well, one was a knockout. We had a double knockdown, which is not what we're talking about here. But we had two knockouts that were vicious. I mean, Cardenas with his walk off right hand counter. Where he's just like,
damn.
His eyes weren't even closed. He was like looking at the other guy's corner, like, yeah, watch this. Bing, good night. And walked off, like, yeah, it's over.
That was
and
sick.
Then we had a sick undercard fight. Harrington and Polacco. Just, I mean, good sharpshooting back and forth first round. And then bang, a right hand from absolute hell. Ices Polacco. Dude, there was teeth on the ring after.
No.
Teeth in the ring afterwards. The doctor, the ref had to go in and get gloves to grab this kid's teeth and bring him into the back. Just, you know, pieces of his teeth, not whole teeth.
Oh, just pieces. Just pieces. That happened in MVP this year. Some kid, a prospects card, first punch of the fight lands on him. His tooth cracks in half. He stops the fight himself and tries to pick up the tooth with the gloves. I'll never forget it, bro. He was trying to scoop him up. And I'm looking at Nonito Donaire, and he's looking at me, and I was like, I've never seen anything like this. This sport is absurd. Like, that is absurd. Teeth on the mat.
Teeth
on the mat. I guess, like, instinct sets in at that point, and if your teeth get knocked out, you go to pick it up, because teeth belong to you, your body.
You can never understand what someone is going through when they get punched in the head, because their brain scrambled, too. So, like, you know, sometimes you get hit with shots, you even know where you are. You're like... You think you're back in fifth grade math class sometimes. Like it's just the way that's just the nature of head trauma.
Wild. Speaking of head trauma, knockout of the year. Brian Norman. Well received. Storyline of the year, you know what this one is. It's TKO's entry. It's 43%. 20% is Crawford retiring, which could have been in any of the years a really big story, but he retired during Paul Joshua fight week, and yes, we don't believe him. We don't believe him, kind of believe him, kind of don't. Would not be shocked if he fights again. Would not be shocked if he just retires. 18% had PED failures. Something that we talked about a lot on the show.
I was thinking about going that route, but it didn't overshadow TKO. And guess what? Boxing overshadows itself when it comes to PEDs. We talk about PEDs quite a bit on this show. Not as much as we probably could because it is so rampant, but we do talk about it.
We do it when we have to. And there's a failed test, I believe, that where you have become the go-to guy on what the drug is, how it affects it. And, you know, it's just something that we offer on this show. It's not something we always want to talk about. And it's not something I want to talk about at all. I actually hate it. But it's a big part of the sport, and it's a big part of 2025. Unfortunately, it was a lot of PED failures, which could be looked at as a good thing and a bad thing. We're catching them. VADA is catching these guys, but they're catching some of them.
That's a really nice way to look at it, Dan.
Sorry, trying to find a positive. At least they're catching them.
At least they're catching.
I mean, it's not stopping these guys from doing it, but it's just stopping the dumb ones. Moment of the year. Last award. A lot of great moments this year. You talked about it in our beginning of the show. Tank taking a knee. Not a great moment for Tank, but a great moment for boxing fans who were like, what the hell was that? AJ knocking out Jake Paul, breaking his jaw, set off a celebration that's still going on right now. I'm currently beefing with Michael Rapaport on Instagram.
You are?
Yeah, why not?
Why not?
This dude, like, he's made 9 videos about Jake Paul in the last week.
9?
9. And I know he doesn't have a lot going on in his career. And
yeah, I just made a comment. Get back into movies, buddy.
I made a kind of a comment like that. Like, I'm not defending Jake. I was like, dude, you've made 9 videos about this guy. You're kind of proving his relevance. And he just starts attacking me. He's like, your mom likes me. And I said, yeah. My mom said, is that the guy from Friends 25 years ago? Why does he look so crusty? He didn't like that comment. And then I'm like, my final comment to Michael Rappaport was like, dude, why are you acting like you're some type of like boxing savant? Like you're some type of boxing purist and you're so offended by Jake Paul entering boxing. I've never heard you talk about boxing before Jake Paul, but you've are hopping on the anti-Jake wave, which is fine. A lot of people have. But don't stop pretending like you're in the trenches with us watching Inoue at 5 in the morning, Rappaport. You're not. You're seizing an opportunity.
Dude, isn't he like 60? Him doing a your mom fucking call out is, absurd.
He's so funny. And when I told my mom that, she was laughing because she goes, let me see this guy. She goes, oh, that's the guy from Bravo.
That's awesome.
I was like, yes, he also was on Friends.
So he was talking against Jake Paul.
Nine videos like fake Paul. He was calling him like, it's fine. Like he says, oh, I bet you thought he won rounds too. I was like, no, I don't. I didn't think he won a single round. I was actually thought he could have fought braver. But I just think it's kind of sad that you've now amounted to making Jake Paul videos and numerous.
Tell him to go listen to our show. You'll see what our take is.
There was a time where I liked him a lot. I met him at Mayweather McGregor, and before he became like a crazy person, and he was like, I think he was working with Barstool, and I was like, oh, this guy's cool. I'd like to have him on my show. He seems like he's with it. And he followed me.
He used to be funny.
Right, he did a bunch of movies, and now he's just kind of like a podcaster guy. More power to him. Like it's a tough biz, but yeah, that's just a little side quest that was on this week.
So is that moment of the year? You fighting with Rappaport? Is that one?
I think moment of the year is me fighting with Shakur.
Ah, well, yeah, well, the sparring session. If you would have sparred him, you actually would have been on this moment of the year.
It would have been a way different story. I mean, the amount of people that have come up to me in Miami in the business were like, I wanted to see that session. And
of course we all did except for me.
Did I send you so the kids at MVP, all the editors, I'll give him a shout out, Nick Wilson. He's one of the MVP's editors, does great work. He brought mitts and gloves to Miami because these guys work like 18 hours in the trenches. They're in like back rooms of the hotel conference rooms, and they brought the gloves because it lets out some stress. And I put them on. And I posted it on Twitter. It's not pretty, but
you posted it's also like doing mitts?
Yeah, I forgot to send to you. I had so much content in Miami that it slipped through the cracks. But my left is strong. My jab is non-existent. I'm not scared to put it on Twitter. I had a bunch of people saying like, "This is the guy that talks about boxing. This is the guy that wants to fight Shakur." Like this is the guy that
this the guy does not want to fight Shakur.
No, I don't. Yeah, I could have easily. Like his DMs are still there, Shakur. His offers are still there. Like yeah, I'll
if
fly
you wanted
Houston.
To, you would have.
Right, I didn't. I talked to my
this
friends
is the
and my
guy
family.
Who wants to fight Shakur.
No, I wrote. I did not want to fight him. Like that's why I replied to one guy. I was like, Like I have zero interest in stepping in the ring with that freak of nature, Shakur. You could piece me up in seconds. I don't know if you can see this.
Yeah, that looks about is what I expected.
I'm ready.
Are you left-handed? You are left-handed, right? Oh, okay.
Yes. Bam! All right. Pa!
Yeah, you got a little heat in that left hand. I mean, you play ball. You play baseball.
It's like they say that when you're hitting, strike through. Like it's almost like a punt. Turn your hips. So I think this year, as we're getting into the resolutions.
All you sleuths out there, clip that, post that. You're going to get flamed.
Nothing new.
Nothing new.
I think my 2026 resolution, I talked about this last night, I was out with a few friends, was getting into the boxing gym and working on my cardio, hitting mitts, and seeing where it takes me.
A good way to lose some lbs, which you said you wanted to do anyway for the new year, but also you should probably do an amateur fight, do a little smoker, do a little white collar fight. I think everyone in the world should have at least one fight.
I think
in whatever discipline you should have one fight.
I think it would do great for our channel. I think it would do great for me personally. Some goals I want to set. It would do great for my career. I think there's a lot of people out there that want to see me get splattered. I think there's a lot of people out there that would be rooting for me.
Yeah, it'd probably be 50-50.
That's great. That's how you sell tickets, baby. That's how you get heat in this business. Yep. Like we tune in to watch Mayweather lose. You tune in to watch Dan Canovio get fucking punched in the face.
Yeah, it's funny how you have become a heel of a sorts in this boxing world. It's pretty
dude,
interesting.
Dude, it's been almost 10 years of me putting out takes on the sport. Like, I'm going to piss people off. I'm going to hopefully gain more followers than not.
There's literally nothing you can say that won't piss people off.
It's impossible in the sport. It's literally impossible. Like, I had someone from Shakur's team come up to me in San Antonio. You're a little crazy on Twitter. You need to tone it down. I was like, no, thanks. Me? Like, tell Shakur to get off Twitter. Like, Shakur tweeted the other day that he why didn't anyone tell me how good Marvin Hagler was?
Wow.
And I just wrote "wow" underneath it, and he retweeted it. Of course,
that's a hot take.
He retweeted it, and he goes, "I didn't just discover him, but I didn't realize how good he was off his back foot and blah blah blah." And I was like, "Bro, you just saved yourself. Like, it's okay." You didn't watch him. It's all right. You're 25 years old. Like, he's well past your time. But as someone like Shakur, who's always on Twitter, and I actually respected this, when you're on Twitter as much as Shakur is and I am, you're going to fire off a bad tweet and you're going to get flamed for a day. And Shakur, not knowing how good Hagler was, which is in turn just admit it, you never really watched him fight because you don't need anyone to tell you how good Marvin Hagler was.
It's something in this generation I've seen in the gyms, at the tail end of my career, how little this younger generation knows about the past. It kind of just shows you, I think these guys could be a lot better if they were studying some of the old time stuff and picking up the things, but
for themselves,
we still are talking. What are we talking?
It's over. The show's over. Moment of the year.
We didn't do moment of the year.
That's Canelo defeating Crawford.
Is that 40%?
Oh, for our fans, what's yours?
I had Chris Eubank Sr. coming out of the out of the limo, dude. That was a full WWE moment for me. It wasn't the event of the year, obviously, but so I'm thinking moment. I'm thinking a moment in time. What got the most reaction out of me this year? It was that when that man stepped out of the ring. I was out of the limo. I was like, oh my god! It was full on.
I launched myself off the couch.
Correct. So that's why I said for a sheer moment of the year, that's my moment of the year. Obviously, it was a very short moment, but that was, I don't know. It was everything. It was that whole storyline coming together, and it's kind of like what I was saying about, you know, this fight in general on this side of the world, people didn't care as much, but people who are really involved in it did. So that was a big moment.
Huge moment.
I'm surprised the Jake Paul knockout didn't get
15%.
I'm surprised. I'm going to go on record and say this. I don't like the fact that he got his jaw broken. I didn't want to see him get hurt. You know, him getting knocked out is one thing. Like, it is what it is. But, like, I think people are celebrating the jaw break a little bit too much, and that's just not. We don't want to see guys get hurt, and that's what we were. That's why we were worried about this fight in general, because the guy can get really hurt, and he did. So, and listen, Jake's doing what he does. His spins are great. He's taking it in stride and making it a positive. But still. That kid broke his jaw in two damn places. That's a catastrophic injury.
Big time injury. And like I said, getting on the elevator after leaving the Live nightclub and seeing Jake's mom getting on the elevator, going to her room and her looking like a worried mother as her son went off to get emergency surgery in Miami, just shows you the reality of the sport, even for someone like Jake Paul.
You want to be a fighter.
Right. So you want to be a fighter, but Chris Algieri in stores right now. But Jake, if you go back and listen to our those episodes when you got really passionate about, like, someone's like, what's the worst that can happen? Like, worst that can happen is you break your jaw in two places, and for some, this might be a good thing.
And never the same person again. How about that? Like, literally, you know, that can happen. So
that got 15% of the vote. 25% of the vote was Tank taking the knee,
That was a big one. That was a big freaking moment, man.
I mean, that happened in March. It was earlier in the year. He takes the knee.
My birthday last year. That was March 2nd. It was on my birthday.
I was running around the Barclays Center. Yeah, I mean, he took the knee, and then him taking that knee was the beginning. Like, it was symbolic. It was like him. It could be the end of his career. Like, I don't know if he fights again. I've heard rumblings that he wants to fight again. I heard rumblings that he has to make everything good with the legal issues. I've heard a lot of things with Tank. We'll see. The wait and see approach. I still think there's an audience for him because he is an unbelievable talent. Mm-hmm. But man, he has to make a lot of changes in his personal life, and that's a tough one. But personally, it's been a great year. You know, 90 episodes. We traveled. You had an unbelievable year on with movie sets and Pro Box and calling big fights. And I just would say that I feel very lucky to do this show twice a week with you. I feel lucky to fly all over the country and work at big fights and meet a lot of our listeners. And I never complain about this job. It gets a little tiresome at times and gets exhausting, but I'm just a very, very lucky guy because this is like the coolest sport in the world. And I don't plan on stopping. I ain't leaving.
For once, Dan, very well said.
Thank you.
I got nothing to add. I feel exactly the same way. I love this business. I love this sport. I love what I'm doing with my life. Yeah, it's tiring, but I'm never going to complain about jumping on flights. And except you said it to me, you're like, dude, you work like crazy. I'm like, yeah, I love this job. I love what I'm doing. Yeah. Like, you know, and we always find time to get in these shows and do whatever we got to do to get the word out there and keep growing this channel. But yeah, no, it's a pleasure to do it with you, Dan. It's been a good year. Thanks. Another good year.
Year four of the Algeria Canobio edition of Inside Boxing Live.
Has it been 4 full years now?
2022, you came on, and year 8 of this podcast as a whole, which is wild to me. Getting on a plane on Tuesday to head to San Juan for Amanda Serrano fight week. Like, once again, not going to complain about that. But we will have more episodes coming. Thank you to everyone that tuned in this year, that sent us messages, that rated us on iTunes, that liked us on YouTube, that liked Chris on Facebook, everywhere. We appreciate you. We couldn't do this show without the listeners. Or else it would just be me and Chris talking in our respective homes into the void. And I think we're going to do more stuff next year. Planning something for T.O. Shakur. Stay tuned for that. More interactive stuff.
We got to get back and do more in the ring stuff. That stuff was well received. Yes. and a lot of fun. We definitely got.
I'm tired of talking about it. I'm getting on a flight. I'm coming down to fucking South Florida. I'm hanging out at your freaking mansion, and I'm gonna go to the gyms there, and we're gonna tape stuff.
Got really nice gyms here. Really nice gyms. Full access.
I think fans want to see that, and then I can also start my journey of becoming a amateur boxer.
Becoming a white collar boxer
at age 38. Like, why not now?
That's when guys do it, man. That's when we raise a bunch of money. You get sponsors. This is
Rival will sponsor me, bro. I was with Russ and Matt all week in Miami. The great guys at Rival who sent us are literally the best. Russ Abner is hilarious. He's the best. Bro, he's so freaking funny.
Dude, they love our Rival show.
Hell yeah.
As I'm sure you know, they were telling you.
You're in my gloves right here. All right, everyone. Thank you for a great year. Protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Stay out of those DMs. We will see you in 2026.
Cheers.
Monster Energy. Everybody knows White Monster, Zero Ultra. That's the OG. It kicked off this whole zero sugar energy drink thing. But Ultra is a whole lineup now. You've got Strawberry Dreams, Blue Hawaiian, Sunrise, and Vice Guava. And they all bring the Monster Energy punch. So if you've been living in the white can, branch out. Ultra's got a flavor for every vibe. And every single one is zero sugar. Tap the banner to learn more.